Tag und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Episode von Oshun, Deutschlands erstem Sneaker- und Streetwear-Podcast mit der nunmehr 119. Episode. Ja, wie man unschwer hören kann, sind wir unterwegs und wenn ich von wir spreche, dann meine ich meine Wenigkeit, Amadeus Thüner und meinen gut drauf seinen co-genialen Co-Host und Kumpel Fabian Fabs Gorsler. Und wenn ich sage, wir sind unterwegs, dann meine ich damit, wir sind unterwegs in Berlin. Wir haben Mitte November und zum Ende des Jahres findet in Berlin die Crab City statt. Crab City, das ist eine Sneakermesse aus Großbritannien, die jetzt das erste Mal nach Deutschland kommt und dann natürlich in die Mutterstadt nach Berlin. Und in freundlicher Zusammenarbeit mit StockX werden wir uns in diesem Advertorial natürlich anschauen, was auf einer Sneakermesse Ende des Jahres 2022 passiert. Wie weit vielleicht auch eine Inflation ein Thema ist, inwieweit auch das Thema Adidas, Kanye West, Yeezy zu tragen kommt, inwieweit wir vielleicht jetzt schon vor Release Lost and Found Chicago Jordan 1 finden werden und gucken, was da so das Backdoor-Thema macht und generell, wie bereit die Leute sind, auch Geld auszugeben. Wenn ja, wie viel und wenn ja, wofür? All das werden wir uns auf jeden Fall anschauen und wir haben auch noch ein paar Leute im Interview.
Heute haben wir unter anderem Co-Founder der Crab City, Ronal Rajchura, und natürlich StockX Vice President und General Manager Derek Morrison, ein sehr, sehr guter Freund des Podcasts. Und wie Amadeus gerade gesagt hat, werden wir schauen, wer alles da ist, wer mit uns sprechen möchte und was alle über Resell in 2022 denken.
Ja, wie hat sich der Markt entwickelt? All das werden wir in den nächsten Minuten checken. Außerdem schauen wir uns natürlich generell das Thema Sneakermesse an. Und bevor wir dahin kommen, natürlich die obligatorische Frage zu Beginn eines jeden Podcasts. What's on my feet today? Gerade natürlich, wenn man sich auf eine Sneakermesse begibt, keine ganz so unwichtige Frage. Also ich habe auf jeden Fall schon Wetten mit meiner Frau abgeschlossen. Wenn heute jemand den Schuh am Fuß hat, den ich am Fuß habe, dann kriegst du auf jeden Fall das nächste Abendessen spendiert. Mal gucken, ob ich gewinne, weil sie hat auch keine Gegenwette angenommen, ne? Also von daher müssen wir mal schauen. Fabs, what's on your feet today?
Heute habe ich zum allerersten Mal meine Pata Nike Air Max One Monarchs Undeadstocked, weil wir ja auf der Messe sind. Es ist ein sehr besonderer Tag. Ich war vor 5-6 Jahren jetzt das allererste Mal auf einer Sneakermesse und es war auch ein Crab City Event in London, deswegen musste ich diese Schuhe rausholen. Ich wette mit dir aber, Amadeus, heute haben bestimmt ein paar mehr Leute auch diesen Sneaker an.
Ja, das könnte tatsächlich sein. Ich bin nur ein bisschen irritiert gerade. Das erste Mal, echt, der Schuh ist ja jetzt schon ein Jahr alt. Du hast den ein Jahr in der Box gelassen.
Ja, ich habe halt sehr viele andere Schuhe und nein, ich finde den Schuh super. Ich habe ja auch den blauen Colorway und wollte mir den halt für einen sehr besonderen Tag aufheben und das ist es ja. Mit dir auf der Sneakermesse. Ja, deswegen, der Monarch.
Ich finde, das ist ein guter Grund auf jeden Fall. Ja. Bei mir heute am Fuß Nike SB Dunk Low Purple Pigeon. Ein Schuh, zu dem es tatsächlich auch noch eine ganz lustige Geschichte gibt. Und zwar habe ich den 2008, 2009 schon mal besessen. Habe ihn dann, die Geschichte habe ich ja schon häufig erzählt, im Rahmen von vielen Nike SBs leider verkauft. Und natürlich seitdem schmerzlich vermisst. Und leider sind die Preise extrem gestiegen in der Zwischenzeit. Ich habe aber ein gutes Angebot gefunden bzw. bekommen vor einigen Monaten von jemandem aus den Niederlanden und wir haben super schnell einen Deal gefunden, einen sehr fairen Deal auch und vielleicht bilde ich es mir nur ein, vielleicht ist es auch nur Wunschdenken, aber ich glaube, ich habe den Schuh zurückgekauft, den ich damals verkauft habe.
Echt? Wie weißt du das?
Naja, wie gesagt, ich hab ja so gesehen keine Merkmale so richtig, aber von der Haptik der Box, das klingt vielleicht auch spirituell gerade, also ist ja nicht so, als ob, also ich meine, die Box war jetzt nicht auf eine besondere Art beschädigt oder so, aber ich habe das Gefühl, so wie der Schuh, also er war vorher ein, zweimal getragen und er war auch von ihm nochmal gekauft, das heißt, sonst hätte man natürlich direkt checken können, ach guck mal, du hast mir den damals vor 15 Jahren verkauft und jetzt hast du mir wieder abgekauft, sondern er hat ihn auch nochmal von jemandem anderen gekauft und sagte zu mir, er war sich auch nicht mehr sicher, es kann durchaus sein, dass der von jemandem aus Deutschland gekommen ist und ich habe einfach das Gefühl, dass dieser Schuh schon mal bei mir war. Vielleicht rede ich es mir nur ein, ist ja auch an der Stelle egal, es ist ein ganz großartiger Schuh. Und wie gesagt, ich bin gespannt, ob heute jemand anderes den Purple Pigeon SB Dunk Low am Fuß haben wird. Das schauen wir uns an dieser Stelle mal an. Komm, wir machen uns auf den Weg zum Festsaal Kreuzberg in Berlin. So, angekommen am Festsaal Kreuzberg in Berlin. Fabs, eigentlich schon mal im Festsaal gewesen? Ich habe sonst noch eine kleine Geschichte. Ich mach so die Einleitung, guck, was du sagst, hat eine kleine Geschichte.
Also ich war schon einmal auf einem Konzert hier. Eden, das ist so ein Elektro-Typ. Da bin ich auch nur mit einem Kumpel mitgegangen, weil der keinen hatte, der mitgehen wollte. Und ich war bestimmt der Älteste in der Crowd. Also es waren sehr, sehr viele Kinder mit den Eltern da. Und es war auf jeden Fall ein stranger Vibe.
Auf einem Elektro-Konzert waren Kinder mit ihren Eltern?
Also nicht Elektro, aber der macht so Elektro-Pop-Musik. Also das ist so einer, der steht da alleine auf der Bühne und macht dann so Klim-Klim, pusht da so ein few Buttons, singt so ein bisschen, spielt dann so ein bisschen Gitarre. Und die Musik war gut, aber wie gesagt, es war jetzt nicht so meine Crowd.
Aber das war im neuen Festsaal Kreuzberg, also da, wo wir jetzt auch gerade sind.
Ja, genau, das war kurz vor Corona.
Okay, das letzte Mal, dass ich im Festsaal Kreuzberg, auch im neuen Festsaal Kreuzberg war, war auch tatsächlich vor Corona bei einem Konzert der wunderbaren Singer-Songwriter-Indie-Rock-Band Bears Den. Habe ich geliebt. Ich frage deswegen aber, weil es gab natürlich auch einen alten Festsaal Kreuzberg, und zwar am Cottbusser Tor. Und der ist irgendwann Anfang der 2010er Jahre abgebrannt. Und ich weiß noch, dass ich dafür sogar Geld gespendet habe für den Neuaufbau und nie wieder was davon gehört habe. Und plötzlich gab es dann den neuen Festsaal Kreuzberg und ich freue mich sehr, hier zu sein, weil es einfach eine sehr schöne Location ist. Jetzt gerade nähern wir uns ja schon der Schlange. Muss sagen, kurz vor 11 ist es. 11 Uhr ist Einlass. Der erste Einlass, man hat das so ein bisschen gesplittet, so Early Bird Tickets ab 11. Dann wiederum ab 14 Uhr, damit man das Ganze auch nicht so, überrennen lässt. Aber die Schlange ist lang.
Ja, wollte ich auch gerade sagen, ich bin sehr, also nicht überrascht, aber es sind sehr, sehr viele Leute hier und das freut mich auch, weil es ist wieder mal ein Physical Event vor Ort. Wir können uns schöne Schuhe anschauen und auch mit den Leuten quatschen und das geht ja auch nur, wenn Leute da sind.
Und ich bin ein bisschen gespannt, also bei den letzten Sneaker-Events, egal von wem organisiert, war es immer interessant zu sehen, sind die Leute vor allen Dingen für Kaufen und Verkaufen da, was natürlich ein Main Point ist, gar keine Frage, aber ist es vielleicht dann doch auch nochmal so dieses Community-Ding, ist es so, dass sich Leute vielleicht auch jetzt gerade mehr noch freuen, wieder aufeinander zu treffen, miteinander zu connecten, sich vielleicht auch mal wiederzusehen? Oder geht es dann doch nur ums Geld? Und da bin ich gespannt jetzt beim Crab City, gerade auch, weil es das erste Mal in Deutschland ist, wie das Ganze abläuft. Deswegen würde ich sagen, wir gehen mal einfach jetzt direkt rein, oder?
Ja, let's do it. So, jetzt sind wir am Main Event angekommen. Wir haben für euch am Start Co-Gründer des Crip City Events, Ron. Ron, how's it going, man?
Yeah, really good. Like, so happy how today's going. Like, it seems really busy. Everyone seems to be enjoying themselves. And yeah, some really cool shoes on the tables as well. So yeah, we're really, really happy.
So, little personal story for you. The first ever sneaker event I went to was Crep City in London, I think 2016, 2017,
no
I believe.
Way.
And I haven't been to a sneaker event since then. So I've only ever been to Crep City events, which is pretty cool.
Mate, that's crazy. Was that the one where we did the Air Max Day thing with Nike?
It might have been. I forgot where it was because I'm also not a London native, but I went with a buddy of mine. It was this old like factory warehouse.
Yeah, I know the one, yeah.
Yeah.
No, we did one there, I think, in 2016 for Air Max Day, where we did some crazy...
It must have been
crazy
that.
Crazy stuff there.
It must have been that. Really, really good event. I mean, it's popping here. Really, really good event. I think for some of the listeners that maybe aren't so aware of Crep City, I mean, they know it's a sneaker event, but do you want to walk us through the history? It's over 10 years old now. How did it start? How did you get to where you are today?
Yeah, so I mean, it started like really small. Like, so we had 2009 started it. I was kind of like a reseller, but I was like buying a lot of stuff. It was like selling a lot of new stuff, a lot of secondhand stuff, like used shoes. And you find like online, people weren't really buying the shoes that were like you were trying to sell. They'd be like, oh, the photos aren't very good, can't really see the condition properly. And then at the same time, I knew a lot of other collectors who like their life was changing. They were having kids, they were getting married, they're moving house, and they wanted to sell their collections as well. So I was like, it'd be cool to do an event, just, you know, community, bring everybody together. Because, you know, back then in London, like, it was very small, the sneaker scene, and everyone knew everybody. So, you know, we did this show, had like 200 people came to it. Most people knew each other. A lot of those people now are all working in the industry, which is actually really cool. And it just grew from there, you know, just having like 10 tables with like a couple of clothing brands. And, you know, just, yeah, grew from there, you know, organically, doubled the number of people the next time and doubled again. And all of a sudden, you know, you've got over 1,000 people coming. We did events with Nike, you know, 2012 we did one. We did one again, like the one we were just talking about, 2017. So yeah, you know, it just grows and grows and grows from there. So yeah, it's cool. It's like just done it organically, just like, you know, people want to come, they want to socialize, they want to buy shoes. So it's like, we want to come and do something cool. And if that's the opportunity, then we're there.
Right, and there's obviously other sneaker events, but what makes Crepe City so special?
I would say, like, we're all about making sure the user experience is really good. So we want all the ticket holders to come and have a good day. It's like there's a cool social element to it, but there's also, we know people want to come to our events because they actually want to come and buy shoes. And so we want to get the best sellers, and we want to make sure the sellers have a good day and that, like, they sell a lot of stuff as well. So we're not really about doing too much stuff with brands unless it's like the right people we want to work with. So we've got StockX down here today, who, like, they're a great partner, and we're like really, really happy to be working with them. But we're more about like the little guys and like the small sellers and making sure they come down and they have a good day. That's the thing for us.
So you've mentioned community, and obviously one part of that is creating an event or a space where community can happen, people can meet each other. But there's obviously an element of creating relationships with these sellers, as you said, right? So how does that work? Are there sellers who keep coming back and have been with you for years?
Yeah, there are. I mean, so like the guys from Prime, like Nons, and Dennis from Zuzu Store, like, you know, I've known these guys for years. You know, like, Nons was coming to our London events, I think, from 2012 or so, 2013. And then Dennis came to some of our shows in 2019. And it's like, from then, you know, we've, like, built a really good relationship with those guys. And we're always like, look, when we're doing a show, we want you guys to come. So we did our show in Amsterdam in July. So, you know, those guys, like, helped us a lot with then. And we've got sellers from the UK who come over. So, like, Vivian Frank, like, famous Growl. I've known him since he was like first like started in shoes, and no one really knew him. And you know, he's such a good guy, and you know, he's supported us so much as he's grown. He's like always like thrown light onto us and been like, oh, you should come to Crepe City, I'm selling there, it's a good event. It's like, you know, he doesn't need to do that. And it's like, you know, his girlfriend's based in Berlin originally, so she's like really helped a lot with helping with this event as well, putting it on. So it's nice, like, we've got a really good network of sellers, and you know, like, they appreciate what we do and we appreciate what they do, so it's very mutual, and we all try and like help each other to an extent, I guess.
I think it speaks for itself, right? When people keep returning, whether it's people selling or buying, if they keep coming back to the event, it means you're doing something right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing for us. We want like the customers to come, and we want them to buy, because then it means the sellers will come back, and then it means like the customers will come back and they'll tell a friend as well. You know, maybe they'll be out and they'll be like, oh, I'm wearing this pair of Dunks. Somebody will be like, where'd you buy it from? Oh, I got it from Crepe City, or I got these Jordans, like, they're really cool, come with me next time, you can buy a pair too. So that's kind of like the approach we try to foster, really. Like, we want to grow the event and, you know, make sure, it's really important to make sure people are buying and, you know, they're engaging with what's on the tables.
And now you've landed in Berlin for the first time. Speak to me a little bit about that. Why Berlin? Why Germany? Is Germany strategically important to Crepe City?
I would say I've always had a good time when I've come to Berlin. I've always met really good people when I've come over here. So, you know, it was very much like an immediate idea that we should do something here. I know there's been other events in other parts of Germany as well, whereas I didn't always know if there was like a really big event happening in Berlin. So we're always like, you know, we're not here to, you know, tread on other people's toes or like fight other events who are doing other things. We're like, if there's a space, we, you know, and there's a gap, we're happy to come. We'd love to come and do events. Like, so, you know, we just saw it as a great city and a really good like place to be able to do something. And there's already existing people that we know here and, you know, not too far from here who wanted to be involved as well. So, yeah, we thought it was a really good idea to be here, yeah.
And now, speaking about sneaker culture more broadly, you've obviously been at with Crepe City for over 10 years now, but certainly collecting sneakers for longer than that.
Yeah.
Have you seen the culture change in that time?
Massively, massively. You know, I started collecting in like 2001, 2002 times. It was very niche. Nobody was really doing it. People thought I was weird. And even then, you know, I wasn't a massive reseller, but I'd be like, you know, kind of like the whole like one to cop, one to shot type thing. So, you know, you kind of pay for my pairs by buying and reselling, and yeah, people would be like, oh, that's disgusting, why are you reselling? And now, you know, everybody, it's kind of like become the norm. And, you know, even, you know, I know like people who aren't really into trainers, and they'll be like, oh, I'm trying to resell these Yeezys, I just got them, I want to get 500 euros for them. And you're like, no, they're not worth that. And they'll be like, no, they are, someone else told me. So yeah, it's changed a lot, and you know, it's become very, very mainstream. I think the thing is, you can either turn away from it and just be like, I'm a sneakerhead, I only like sneakerheads, or you just embrace it. And it's like, if people like dunks, they like dunks, and let them come and enjoy what they like. It's their own expression, and everyone has to start somewhere.
So speaking about taste, how have your tastes developed over time personally?
I'm always open to like trying out like new technology and things like that, and like different things that the brands bring out. So like when like Boost came out like 2015 or so, that was something that really excited me. And yeah, spent probably way too much money on like different shoes, just trying out like what they all felt like. I'm really like keen on like all the VaporMax stuff that Nike have done as well. That's like kind of like something new that like over the last few years, which really impressed me. And I really like the Scorpions as well. So I'm always like interested in the new stuff, but always got a place in my heart for the older stuff as well. Like, you know, I've got like Air Force Ones and Dunks and Huarache Lights from like probably 20 years ago, and I still wear them all the time if they hold up on me. Yeah,
and obviously tastes have changed over time, and I'm assuming what's been bought and sold at Crepe City has changed over time, but even from market to market it's probably different, right? You had the event last in London, now in Berlin, there's probably different sneakers, different items on the tables.
Yeah, it's really telling, because you know, we've done some shows in certain cities in the UK where it's been loads of Jordans, and then we did the show in Amsterdam where, like, you know, we had complaints that there was too much Air Max, and we're like, well, then we've got people in London saying, oh, I need more Air Max at an event. So you always try to facilitate and get what people want, but each city does have its own feel. You know, we even did a show in Glasgow and some of the comments were saying there was too much New Balance. We're like, that's a win. You know, if you've got too much New Balance, that's a win compared to where things were even like 2-3 years ago. So yeah, it's good.
Exactly. And so talk to me a little bit about StockX and the partnership there. Why StockX, and why is it important to have an authentication partner on site?
So I'd say why StockX is because it's a platform that I've used from the start. I was like, you know, they approached us when they did the launch in Europe, and we did an interview with like Josh, who was then the founder. And we, you know, we've always like been happy to work with them. You know, they're, you can't beat it really, to be able to know that you're buying from somewhere and the shoes are authentic. And I think, you know, it's nice to have somebody like that at the event, because people buying, they've got a little bit of reassurance that, you know, they can go, they can check the shoes, make sure they're verified, and it's like an extra pair of eyes on them. You know, maybe you don't know everything about shoes and you're really keen on something, so it's nice to have somebody else to look at them and be like, actually they're real. I mean, with the sellers, we always try to work with people who we know or we have some relationship with, but obviously in new markets that is a little bit more tricky, so it's sometimes like word of mouth, like I know this person, bring them in. But then it's still like, it's nice for the consumer to know there's a little like extra level of authenticity to what's being sold.
For sure, I think that trust goes a long ways. Yeah. To also continue to create that community that you're trying
completely,
to foster.
Completely.
Yeah. And then looking towards the future, how do you see Crepe City evolving, growing in the next 12 to 18 months?
I think we were like very, very London focused for a long time, and then we kind of like slowly went out around the UK doing events. Like we did a show in Manchester for like 4 years, and then I think after that we were like, you know, we can try other places. We've always been very conscious about not like treading on other people's toes. You know, we're not here to like fight with other events. Like that's really been the thing. So we've always been like very slow to like move into new territories, because that's not really what we're about. But like, since the COVID and everything that happened, we've just seen there's such a demand and so many people want to come to these events. So we're like, you know, we're quite keen to like try new things and enter new markets and try and put on good experiences for people. Like we wouldn't do it just for the sake of doing it, but you know, if we can do something cool and like work with good partners, and we're always open to working in new areas. Like, yeah, we've got a few ideas, but it's just a case of seeing how we can do things in the next like 12-18 months. Like,
and to your point, I mean, to your point about treading on people's toes, I think I speak for many people. There's more than enough weekends to go around, right?
Completely.
And I would love to have more sneaker events in Berlin, because, you know, sometimes you either can't travel to the ones that are in, I don't know, Amsterdam, London, Manchester, because of timing reasons, budgetary reasons. And so it's nice when not always the same event is in your city, but, you know, there's a rotating, because each event brings a different people, different sellers, like you said.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's like every event's got its own relationship with its own sellers. You know, there's probably like, being really honest, there's probably more local people who could run an event and have like a lot more local based sellers. Whereas, like, you know, we did the show in Amsterdam, we got like a really good set of sellers there, and a lot of them said they sold so well there, they're just like, I just want to come here because you guys bring a good crowd and it makes it worth my while. So, you know, there is like a different like variety of people that you can bring through. So yeah, it's really interesting. But yeah, you know, like, we just want to, like, you know, do cool events and, you know, make sure they're good and make sure, like, the customers and ticket holders actually enjoy what they're doing as well. That's the most important thing.
What about more broadly as well, the future of the culture, the future of community? We've had a long period of no events, a lot of online things because of COVID, and now the world is, you know, a lot more open than it has been the last 2 years. Where do you see that evolving?
I think it's just going to keep, probably for the next 5 years, I can see it really, like, continuing to grow. Like, you can see, as soon as we did our first show in 2021 after COVID, we saw, like, we did two shows back to back in August, at the start of August, Manchester and London. We sold twice as many tickets as we'd ever had for those events. And then into this year, we've seen, like, that demand's still there, like, people are still coming. So, you know, we're really, really happy, and we can see, like, a real demand for what we're doing. Like, there's so many sellers here just being like, oh, okay, wow, this is actually really, really good. It's really busy. Like, you know, I wasn't expecting this many people to come. So yeah, we're happy, and we can see there's definitely a growth to it.
Do you feel that sneaker culture lost a little bit of that community during the lockdowns, or did the community just change?
That's actually a really good question. I think it was really cool seeing people doing, like, live streams and, like, clubhouse things where, you know, they were still getting together. But I think you can't beat actually getting together in person. Even, you know, the market for shoes is moving so fast now. Like, there's so much stuff, it comes out and it's gone within a blink of an eye, and you never get to see it. So I think events are good, even just for the physical, just to actually, as someone who appreciates shoes, just to actually pick something up and be like, oh wow, that's that shoe, I didn't even know it came out, but I missed it, but it's good, and at least I can see it in hand. Whereas, you know, things are so, like, fast paced, if you don't buy something on the day of release, or, you know, win like a raffle after entering 100, you've got no chance anyway. So it's just quite nice to actually come and see and appreciate things, because sometimes you might actually realize that something isn't that great and you don't love it that much and you don't want to pay resale, and sometimes you'll see it in hand and be like, ah, do you know what, it's worth it. So yeah,
exactly. Actually, on the way over here, Emma and I were talking about, you know, oh, are you going to buy anything, what are you looking for? And one of the sneakers that I missed out on at release and have been wanting to buy for ages, but I cannot justify the StockX prices, is the ISPA Road Warrior, the original colorway.
They're nice.
So nice. But it seems like nobody has a pair that they want to sell in my size. I feel like everyone who has my size either is keeping it or doesn't want to sell. And so that's why I was hoping to see them here.
I don't even think there's that many pairs of that shoe. Like, it's quite a niche.
It's very niche.
So I feel like That sort of shoe, it's like you almost, like, buy it and wear it, or you just never see it anywhere. It's like, yeah,
I definitely missed the boat on that one. But
yeah, that's one of those shoes though, like, because I remember seeing them, and you get them and you're like, you see online and you don't know. And then I actually saw a returned pair in an outlet, because someone in the UK had bought them and they couldn't resell them at the time, so they'd gone back to the outlet and they were trying to sell them there for full price, and I was like, they're nice, but it wasn't for me. So I was like, okay, I'll leave it, because I wasn't really in the mood for buying much at the time. But yeah, it's nice sometimes to actually see things like in hand, rather than, you know, looking at some pictures online, or, you know, some, like, heavily edited filtered images, and, you know, maybe it's not the one sometimes.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna have to wait a little bit longer until I can get my hands on a pair of those. But to round it off, I'd like to ask you a personal question. Do you ever buy anything at Crepe City? And if so, what was your last purchase at Crepe City?
I find, yeah, it can be dangerous. Like, sometimes I spend way too much. So I'm not buying at the moment, because I just purchased the Viatech Air Max 1s on StockX about a week ago and paid way too much money for them. But our show in Glasgow, like, we flew up, so I didn't really have much luggage space. I ended up bought these Chinatown Air Max 1s, and I bought a pair of denim Air Max 1s as well. Just, I was, like, talking about it, and then I saw them and I was like, oh, one guy had both, and I was like, do you know what, I'm just going to buy both pairs. And yeah, so it's not ideal. And I bought something in Amsterdam as well. I can't even think what it was now, but yeah, it's a bit dangerous. So I try not to look unless I know I've got spending money, because it's like, it can be dangerous sometimes.
You got to keep the blinders on when you walk past.
Yeah, it's like you're at work rather than, you know, shopping. So I'm like, yeah,
exactly.
Try and be in work mode.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ron. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Cheers. Thank you.
Wir sind jetzt hier mit Derek von StockX. Ein guter Freund vom Podcast, war ja schon mehrmals hier. Derek, how you doing? Thanks for talking to us. How's it going?
Hey, good to be here, guys. Always love talking to you. It's great. Love being in Berlin. It's, you know, one of my favorite cities in Europe. So every time I get to come down, I'm super stoked.
Nice. We love having you here. So we're here, Krebs City. StockX is here in force. What's the deal? What are you guys doing here?
Yeah, I mean, we've got we've partnered with Krebs City both in London and in Berlin, so it's great to come with, you know, one of the oldest sneaker shows around Europe, especially in the UK, come to town. You know, we've got a base in Berlin, so that's a big part of why we want to be here on the ground more. We've got an authentication center that we have just outside of Berlin, and so here we've got some of our authentication team, you know, verifying product for people on the table. We've got some giveaways happening with our Guess the Grail box. We've got we've partnered with Almost Home, a really great European brand. They've got some exclusive merch and fashion here. So we've got just a lot of stuff going on at the booth, and kind of just being stuck into the scene. It's great.
Nice. So we'll get to the authentication center in a second. But you mentioned Germany. You have a big base in Berlin. How important is the German market to StockX?
Well, I mean, I think the bigger question is, how important is the German market to sneaker culture globally? And I think, you know, there's such a long, rich, unique history of sneaker culture in terms of just culture, you know, in the city. So that's Germany. And then Berlin is such an exciting city within that. I mean, before we started the interview, we were talking about how special is Berlin. It has its unique identity, its unique cultural voice. And I think that, you know, it is in so many ways a muse to the global culture of design and fashion and beyond sneakers. So I think that that's definitely something that is undeniable about the city. And you can feel that when you're here. And it's just, that's a big part of why I love it so much.
You mentioned that London was the week before this, now Berlin. What are some of the major differences you've noticed?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting to see a couple things, right? One, you see like a generational shift. So just even within the show, some of the older heads versus some of the younger heads, like what they're into and what kind of products and what like their background is. And you can see that just in the style and the way they carry themselves in both cities relative to each other. But then, of course, you know, the UK, the Krebs City is the oldest, I think, running sneaker show in the UK. So it's got a really strong established presence. And I think this is the first time they've done it in Berlin. So still kind of establishing it locally. So that's, I think, just in terms of size, it was Box Park in Wembley and a smaller but really cool venue here here in Berlin. And, you know, I think, I always love seeing the different preferences of each market for sneakers. And, you know, obviously Adidas has such a long history in Germany, and you know, some of the ZX models and things like that are obviously, like, you know, pretty prime product in Germany. So you don't see that quite in the same way that you do in the UK and plenty of other wrinkles like that.
Definitely. I was about to say there's probably some ZX models, and I saw a Hummel St. Pauli collaboration, which I can almost guarantee you, you're not going to see at Krebs City in London or at outside of Germany, probably. So in terms of the turnout, I mean, it's been great here. Lots of people here. How does that feel partnering with Krebs City and seeing so many people? I mean, we saw a huge line outside and now they're all rushing here. The StockX stall is probably one of the most visited as well. How does that feel?
I think it's great. It's really exciting. You know, I think, well, you know, I've been a sneakerhead all my life, so I've had it for decades as a part of my life. And I think for the younger generation, where this isn't such a typical thing, where they've maybe discovered and gotten into sneaker culture digitally, having these real life experiences to see the community around these products is really important. Because I think, you know, in this kind of post hype era, hype brought so many people into it. I think they don't necessarily have an understanding or a connection to the underlying culture. And so I think that we really need to, as a culture, embrace the community around it as much as the product. Because I think, you know, as we fragment away from hype and it becomes a much more nuanced cultural conversation, you know, these types of experiences and gatherings are going to become more and more important for us to make sure that sneakers are still relevant 5 years from now, 10 years from now.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool to hear you say that, because StockX is obviously very focused on buying and selling sneakers, right? And uses a marketplace, and we were discussing this earlier, also used to determine market prices, right? Even if you're not buying and selling on StockX, which is what's happening here. But then to hear you say that community is very important and that you want to be a part of it and foster it is actually, yeah, very, very positive, I think, to hear for our...
Yeah, I think it's really simple, right? We don't make sneakers and we don't make product. We're just connecting buyers and sellers of product. So the vibrance of our marketplace is dependent on the vibrance of the community and the vibrance of the culture. If people get disenfranchised or kind of like disillusioned from, because they can't get Nike sneakers products, they can't, you know, everything that's happened with Yeezy and other brands, there's a lot of reasons for people to not be as engaged as they were. And I think, you know, if we can see that, if that happens, on if the culture dies, our marketplace will die. So we have to find ways that we're helping to perpetuate the culture in a way that's going to make it exciting for everybody to want to continue to buy products in it.
Yeah, that's a really realistic view of it, right? Obviously, you're here to make a product that people can use. And if the culture dies, then obviously StockX will have to pivot at some point, right? But in terms of culture, speaking of culture, how do you see 2022 so far? How has sneaker culture, the community, and also the marketplace developed?
Yeah, I think, you know, probably if you go back a couple of episodes on Oshuin, where we talked about, I made the reference to talking about how hip-hop and sneaker culture kind of have these parallels, right? When hip-hop on the radio brought a lot of people all into hip-hop that never heard it before. It was listening to 50 Cent and Jay-Z and Eminem on the radio. That was their introduction to hip-hop. And I think that peak Yeezy, peak Virgil, you know, peak Jordan hype, that was kind of a lot of people's introduction to sneaker culture. And what we saw with hip-hop is it's kind of fragmented and evolved. And, like, hip-hop is such a diverse, multi-genre niche, you know, subcultures and subgenres within hip-hop, that now that there's so many people in it, it's become a much more creatively diverse landscape. And I think now when you look at sneaker culture, I think we've entered this kind of post-radio hype era of sneakers, and you see a lot more opportunity because there's so many more people involved in the culture. There's a lot more demand that can spread across a lot of diverse categories itself, and I think that's why it's really exciting in many ways. A lot of people like to say that, oh, sneaker culture, the hype, the premium stuff is not there anymore, but that's actually a really healthy thing for the culture because now it's not about everybody wanting the same thing. We're back to what sneaker culture was, which was individual expression. And now you can actually say much more about your expressive identity or your what you want to say through your what you're wearing through more than just one thing. It's not about wearing what the same guy is wearing across the street from you. That's why I think you see things like Salomon, Hoka, you know, Flowers for Society being able to have success now. You see New Balance has done an incredible job, which I also called out a couple of years ago as saying this is a brand that's going to continue to rise. You know, and I think that this diversity within sneaker culture, spreading all of this demand across more products, makes everything more accessible. And again, I think when you can access anything like you can on StockX, it's really about why do you want to access anything? If you can have everything, why do you want any one thing? And that allows people to focus more on what they're trying to express, and there's more colors to paint with. So I think that those lower prices, making it more approachable, less premium on like the super hype products, I think this is really healthy, and I think it's really exciting for independent brands coming out to not have to be this kind of homogenous hype identity.
Actually, I just want to say at this point, I love the way that you put that together, because when I was on the way over here, I was trying to think of who are the biggest winners of 2022. What are the biggest resale trends or secondary market trends? And I feel like in the years before 2022, it was always very clear. You know, you had the Dunk hype, you had the New Balance hype. But this year, sure, some of that has continued, right? And you've had some really good Jordan releases. I'm looking at Ama Manier. Yep. You've had some really good New Balance releases as well. But there's nothing that really sticks out and defines this year. And so I was thinking, like, maybe this year just hasn't been that crazy or good. But the way you put it is perfect. It's diverse, and there's so many different things that people can get into.
And I think that, you know, our thing has always been about accessibility, right? And we don't create the market. Well, we create the marketplace, but we don't dictate what happens in the marketplace. Supply and demand dictates what happens in the marketplace, right? And so I think it's if it's cool, and it's perceived to be cool to buy something different, you know, those are more accessibly priced things. And I think, you know, people always used to think, oh, StockX is so expensive. But if you actually look through StockX, like, there's so many amazing products that are below retail. There's so much more. It's so much more than just hype premium. So if anything, the customer benefits from that. But, you know, I think it's really that. I think it's if you're an independent brand, you're creating sneakers, you're a winner right now because people are not scared to buy a new sneaker brand. And if you're a customer, you're a buyer, prices have never been more in your favor to buy something that's interesting as well. And so I think the losers and the people that really are the ones that are under the pressure, I think, is a company like Nike, who, you know, they've... I don't even know the last time I opened the sneakers app. If I show you my phone right now, it's probably not even downloaded. I can prove it. So, and it's not because I'm over Nike, but I'm just, you know what? I can't be asked to go bother and trying to like queue up for a shoe that's not as inspired, that the materials aren't as good as they used to be, when I can go to a New Balance store and buy a Teddy Santis or something like that. Like, there's more stuff where I can take Flowers for Society or what's happening with Diadora, and like, there's better produced products out there that are more accessible. And I think that, you know, the big companies that have kind of had a chokehold on sneaker hype, they're the ones that need to do to return to delivering resonance to the customer to get them inspired again.
I think it's twofold, right? It's the inspiration of the product and the way it speaks to the customers, but also it's the accessibility. Like you said, I think a big reason why a lot of people don't use the sneakers app, or for them it's an afterthought, like a backup, is because they go in thinking they're going to lose, right? And StockX, on the other hand, sure, you're paying more money for the same shoe, maybe, but you're guaranteed to get it if you're willing to pay that price.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's, you know, again, it comes back to accessibility, right? And you know, and fairness to a degree. And I think that's why a lot of people, you know, sales of New Balance on StockX are up phenomenal amount year over year, and Jordan sales are down. And I think some of that is trend driven, but some of that is, I think, a reflection of the sentiment of the relationship people have with the brands and the resonance of what's being created.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, we don't have to go into details here, but I think a lot of that is also, it's not just hype product that's selling, right? It's a lot of generalist colorways, generalist New Balance sneakers that are really moving.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. I always like this because I'm like, I want to make sure that people like listen to me when I was on record when I said stuff, because when it comes out to be true, you know, one of my favorite expressions is even a broken clock is right twice a day, and I identify with that a lot. But you know, I said, I think 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, you know, we're entering a post hype era. Like, and you could see that people were, look, what makes sneakers interesting and what makes this culture so compelling that people want to queue up on a Sunday morning to get into a space just to buy stuff, or not even buy, just to look at shoes, is because there's a deep cultural resonance that underpins the product, right? And I think that when you look at where that resonance comes from, sometimes it comes from a collab, sometimes it comes from a designer, but it's a medium you're buying to connect with something beneath it. And I think that's why I think it's such a great time for independent designers, independent brands, because they all have something that's really resonant and relatable that they're trying to express. Till, Flowers for Society, you know, I'm a big fan of Till, and he's always had really profound vision for what he's trying to accomplish. And so I think it's very easy to connect to that and to look at someone in the eye and say, this is this guy, this is his product, this is his vision, and it's well-made product. I want to buy into that, and I can connect with that. That's a closer thing to connect with. You know, I'm wearing Beautiful Struggles, Danny Williams stuff, which I think I've talked about on your podcast. Amazing guy, one of my best friends, and he has a beautiful story of how he transitioned and overcame adversity to create a fashion brand. Like, I like buying into that stuff. Almost Home, the guys at our booth, these are guys that have, like, it's their story with great, well-made products that you're buying into that you can connect with directly. And that's the resonant part that connects music or any sort of art to the customer. And I think that there's never been a better time for people to be able to connect to those things. And that's really what's going to keep the culture, I think, vibrant going forward. Less about what is the next limited, artificially scarce Nike product.
Right. So looking towards the future a little bit, I'm going to ask you this question in two parts. Mm-hmm. So first, I mean, you've spoken to this a little bit, but what do you see the future of the sneaker culture in the next, I don't know, 12 to 18 months?
Yeah.
And then part two, Crep City 2023, what do you think is going to be on the tables there? Because to be fair, we are seeing still a lot of Dunks, a lot of Jordans, right? And still a lot of Yeezys. But I think we're at the beginning of what you described of the post-hype era. And I think if we look at the tables in a year, we'll probably be seeing a very different selection.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think the what's on the tables part, I think that's going to continue to change is, you know, I think you'll see, well, in Germany, you'll always see more runners. That's always a big part of kind of just like the longer term culture. I think, you know, New Balance will continue to break through. I hope we see some other heritage brands start to come back. I'm a big Diadora collector. So I hope that we continue to see that because there's some great made runners there. And some of the other brands that I've mentioned, I think will continue to kind of bubble up, and maybe new ones too, right? And who knows what's going to happen with some of these brands. I think the big brands, they're always going to be pillars and like cornerstones of the culture. I think that, you know, all of the things that I'm saying about challenges that Nike's having in terms of their perception within sneaker culture, I'm sure they're more acutely aware of this than anyone and trying to figure out, well, how do we get back to being, you know, inspiring people in the way that we've always done. I think the culture needs them to do that. So I'm sure that they're taking those things seriously. And then I think the experience needs to continue evolve, because I think, you know, again, so many people who've gotten into sneaker culture arrive to it or introduced to it through the digital era. I think these types of physical experiences need to be less about coming to buy product at and more around perpetuating, celebrating, and incubating the culture around it. And I think one other thing that I think we've seen already is, you know, people 2 years ago were dressing from the feet up. Your sneakers were the most important piece of your outfit, and everything kind of came out of that. I don't think that's the case anymore. I think sneakers have never been more diverse, but I think the overall expression, the overall outfit, the overall identity, sneakers, I don't think, are the entire focal point. I think it's the sum of all parts more. As much as they're still important, I don't think they're as important to the overall fit and expression as they were 2-3 years ago. So I think that's also, and you know what, frankly, I think we should start to expand how we think of sneaker culture now, because it's not just sneakers even. I think, you know, Crocs and other types of shoes, we've established as our shoes category on StockX. And I think, you know, you've seen trends for a long while of like J.M. Weston, like, you know, fashionable loafers, like, you know, leather shoes starting to come back and have a lot more kind of context and urbanization in terms of like the like street culture, street fashion. So I think we'll continue to see that. And, you know, maybe we're going to be seeing like limited edition, like handmade loafers that are going to be like leather shoes on the table. You know, maybe a Hender scheme is like just or has been early for a long time. So I think that you know, what we put on our feet is always going to be a critical part of expression. But I don't think that even sneakerheads think about it just as, do I have to tie this up with the laces or not?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And also to your point about this being more than just a place to buy and sell sneakers, it's a place to meet like-minded individuals. Yeah. And I mean, at this point, I just want to say, how great is it that we're here physically after everything that's happened the last couple of years and are able to just talk about sneakers?
Totally. I think it's great. And I think that the one thing that the pandemic kind of did is I think it made us reflect and realize like how special these moments are and savor. And I feel like people come to these things with a renewed sense of appreciation for those connections and for that community in a way that maybe we took for granted before. So hopefully we continue to find ways to do that better.
For sure. Now let's come back to the authentication center. Mm-hmm. I haven't forgotten that. What's the status there? How's that looking?
It's great. I mean, so we are live in Berlin. So we are routing a good portion of all of the sales that we're having in Europe through our German authentication center. Obviously, you know, getting closer to our key markets and getting closer to the supply is such an important part for us to be able to provide a better experience for buyers and sellers. And obviously Germany and being such a huge market for us and such an important part of where we want to grow, not only in terms of satisfying our supply management, but just as a key market that we want to be invested in as a business. It's really, really proud. Our facility there is you know, we're managing product there now and receiving product. It is a big facility. I think about 100,000 square feet facility in Berlin, one of our biggest in the world. And so it's a real statement of like what not only we're doing now, but what we intend to do over the years to come. And as we expand and we start to look at how are we holding inventory or custodial inventory for for future initiatives to kind of provide that express shipping to get guaranteed delivery next day and things like that, more Amazon Prime experience, that's going to be such a huge important facility to our effort in that as well.
I know in the past you've had pop-ups in other cities in the US. Is that something we can expect in Berlin or maybe in Europe as well?
You know, I think it's definitely something that we talk a lot about and we really want to make happen. You know, we almost had one this year, which was our plan. But we just for a number of reasons it didn't work out. But we know again, like being at this event today, being present physically in the market is such an important part to building trust, building a relationship with our customers in market. So that's definitely something that's a huge focus for me. We obviously have our facility in London that we continue to do a lot of stuff with and working with brands and trying to find other ways to showcase and create experiences there. So that's something we want to continue to roll out, whether it's in a pop-up retail location, permanent retail location, or individual activations. We now have, we've also recently opened retail in Tokyo, in Japan, and we have a newly renovated and reopened facility in Hong Kong, and we're renovating our retail in New York. So it still continues to be a key part of how we can make it safer and easier for sellers to bring their product to us, and also experiences we can create in market. So yeah, you'll see in lots of different fashions how are we continuing to get closer to the market, show that we're invested, show that we're present, and also celebrate what's happening locally that's unique and special in market, but also to export to our other markets around the world.
For sure. I think as soon as you have a physical presence, even if it's just a temporary one, StockX stops being something you see on an app or on a screen, but rather there's people to interact with, people that are wearing StockX t-shirts that are representing the company, the brand. And that's what's so great about the stall here, right? You can go and talk to authenticators, you can play the authentication game. And it's, yeah, just the interaction is what's so great.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in a market like Germany where, you know, trust and, making people feel secure and confident in where and how they're spending and buying products. I think it's such an important it's especially important for the German consumer, and we're certainly conscious of that and want to make sure that we're showing up as a brand in a way that helps us build trust and make those connections, because again, we're not we're here. We have a big physical investment that we've made in market. We've got a commitment to the region, and we want to make sure that we're able to tell that story to people's faces like we're doing today.
As a StockX user, it's especially as a StockX user in Germany, it's great to hear you say that Germany is a big part of your plans. And yeah, it's definitely great to have you here at Crepe City. Thank you very much. Is there anything you want to add at all?
You know, I keep my receipts. Go back, check out the old Oshun episodes, get those streams up, and see if I was wrong and see what I said, because I think that, you know, as I said, that broken clock's been right a few times today.
Very nice. Thank you, Derek.
Thanks, guys. I love being here as always.
Wir haben jetzt kurz vom StockX-Stand weggeholt einen waschechten StockX-Authenticator und jemand, der schon mal bei Oshun dabei war. Adriano, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Good. Good to have you back on the show. We love talking to you. Big topic now is the new authentication center in Berlin.
Yes.
What can you tell me about that?
Yes, so they've been open for a good couple of months now. The guys before actually being part of the new AC in Berlin, they were in our Dutch facility for a while to get their training. They had a good experience there. They got intense training program and took all of that experience here to Berlin, and they've got the ball rolling, and Berlin looks like they're doing a great job.
Nice. And how does that change it for the German consumer? Does that mean quicker, easier access to product?
I mean, the access to product is always there because StockX is a global platform. So no matter where you are, you'll always have the access to what's listed on there. I guess what makes it beneficial, it depends what end you're on. With the seller, I guess it would come to Germany. So it'll probably just get to the center quicker as opposed to Holland. So for the seller, it means you will highly likely get a quicker payout, providing everything out of our control runs well, like the delivery, the courier, and so forth, because, you know, they can always have a bad day as well. And it also depends for the buyer where they are and what seller they're linked to. But yeah, you know, if the more local you are, in theory, you would get your item either checked out quicker, or, you know, you would receive it quicker.
Right, and the team is growing. How's that for you as part of the team, core part of the team, to see that the AC team is becoming a bigger part across Europe?
I think it says a lot in itself. If a team is growing, it means that the business is developing. You know, there's always more things coming out. There's more things to look for. And not only is the team growing, it's not just authentication. There's different departments that are growing, new roles that have developed, just to make sure that the customer experience is as best as it can possibly be. And one good thing about StockX is we're never at a point where we're happiest. What can we do next?
And one thing we've noticed recently is the language changed on the site, right?
Yes.
From 100% authentic to verified.
Yes.
Can you walk us through that? So what does that actually mean? Does that mean that the process itself has changed?
Not entirely. It's because when you say authentication, of course, the word authentication is legitimacy, basically, whereas verification is... What we do precisely is when you sell something on StockX, we don't just say this is legit or this is counterfeit. We need to make sure that the size is correct. So that's the verification process. We need to make sure it's dead stock and not used. That's a verification process. So as each item, whether it's streetwear or sneakers, they go through these processes. You want to look for defects. You want to look for so many different things. So I think StockX have done the right thing to change the terminology, because it's not just authentication, it's verification. You verify an item. So if it passes all of those things, as you can see, there's a disclaimer when you sell something, is it in its original box? So that is part of the verification process, is checking that the box is correct. So before you even look at the product, you're looking at the packaging. So that is all part of the terminology, is actually being as precise as possible.
Right, it's more all-encompassing, which I think is reassuring for our listeners to hear, because it seems like the process itself hasn't changed. It's just the way that it's presented on the site.
Yeah, of course. And I believe I might have highlighted this in our previous chat, which was, of course, guys, a pleasure to be on. And I was explaining it's not just legitimacy that I'm looking for. I need to make sure that, first of all, the seller has sold the right size. So before I even check that something is legit, I need to make sure that he's sold the right size. I need to make sure that the product code is the same. So you also have retros that come out. So like, you know, you need to make sure it's the right year. You need to, so the product code is the same. So it's, you're looking at so many different things before you actually decide, is this real or is it a fake?
That makes sense. Now let's talk about you real quick. Crepe City Berlin.
Machen gerade einen Tipp. Wir sind auch gleich fertig, alles gut.
Sorry. So let's talk about you real quick. Crepe City Berlin. Have you bought anything? Are you looking at anything? Have you seen anything you like?
So I haven't bought anything yet, because I like to...
The day is long though.
It is. I like to evaluate my options to then make a decision, but there's one stand that has some classic... Air Maxes, you've got some Patara Air Max 90s, you have some cool stuff on that stand. I don't remember their name, but they have some nice classic stuff. I'm into my older stuff, especially Air Max, so that's where I've had my eye on so far.
Very nice. Well, hopefully you pick up something very nice, add to your collection. It was a pleasure having you on. Thank you for your answers. It's, as I said, always a pleasure.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be on.
Ich sage immer, spontane Interviews sind die besten Interviews. Ich präsentiere euch Non von Prime. How you doing?
I'm good.
How is your day going at Crepe City Berlin?
To be honest, it's good to see a lot of people I've seen like 2, 3, 4 years ago and from before the lockdown. And a lot of German MX1 collectors. And I like it. I like it. It's a small event. It's people are happy. They look good. You have like a lot of new collectors have seen stuff on internet and they think like, oh, I'm gonna buy this for cheap. And then they're like, oh, that's a really really high price. But and then you have the old collectors like, oh shit, I need this. It's really really nice. I like it. Yeah.
And business is good. Pairs are moving.
I'm gonna be honest. Ron asked us over and next time I would bring a lot of more stuff. You know, where like we brought like a selection of. He asked us to bring like a selection of 20 rare pairs. We did something around. It's okay. It's cool. And we're selling some stuff. It's okay. But no, the next time, I'm going to bring more pairs and more MX-1. Because I see a lot of people like to buy MX-1 again in Berlin even. So it's really good.
Yeah. I mean, Amsterdam is the, you know, tier one Air Max 1 city, but I think in Berlin it's also quite popular.
I don't think Amsterdam is a tier one. Holland is
okay,
tier one.
Holland,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, because a lot of people prefer... I live in Amsterdam, so I love Amsterdam, but a lot of people are also referring always to Amsterdam, but if you go into up north, south, everybody wears Air Max 1, you know? It's not a city. I think even Amsterdam is maybe less Air Max 1 now, you know? Because, yeah, we have a lot of designer kits now also in Amsterdam.
That's very true here as well in Berlin. So how have you seen resale develop over time? You said you've been at it for years and, you know, pre-post lockdown. What are some trends you can talk about?
The funny thing is, like, a week ago I was discussing with some friends and we were like, it really didn't change. The only thing what changed is, like, there was less Air Max 1, but it was also around 2014. And people were going onto Dunks and Jordans, but now there are more Air Max 1 and a lot of people jump back on it directly. And now they have all kind of new sellers. And it's like every wave, you know, some selling, some buying. And the difference is that a lot of people think now if I buy this pair, it's going to be money. And I'm like, you're wearing it, it's not going to be money, you know. That's the only thing which is changing. People think shoes are money. And for the rest, it's the same. It's always a wave. Up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. But if they're going to produce more MX-1, I think the Dunk is going to go. In Holland, it's going to go because we got tired of everyday new release Panda. Yeah.
What about Yeezys? We discussed this a little bit. Do you think they're selling better or worse after the announcement?
I thought that the price is going to be sky high. I had some old stuff. I was waiting for some money. I thought, hey, finally, I'm going to make some money on this peep. But no, the prices are still going slowly up, down, up. So I don't know what's really going on. I don't know if people hate him or don't want to buy from him, or if they think he's crazy, you know. But I thought the prices will go skyrocket, but no, it's not happening at the moment. And maybe later on, maybe people don't believe Adidas skipped him and all those other brands, you know. Maybe after Christmas or January it's going to go up, but for now it's strange, it's not going sky high.
I think we need to wait, or maybe some people need to wait and see how it shakes out, right? Like Adidas sent out this statement that, you know, they own the rights to the Yeezys and
yes,
could possibly release the Yeezys under a different name in the future.
Could be.
I think people are waiting for that to then determine whether or not it's worth paying resale or not.
I really don't know what's going to happen with this Yeezy thing.
I mean, sometimes resale can be predictable, sometimes it's super unpredictable.
It's
I think
true.
That's the beauty of it, the beauty of the culture,
it's
the
true.
Beauty of the game.
Yeah.
How is it for you as a seller when you prepare for these kinds of events? Because going through looking at the tables, there's two types of tables, I feel like. There's the tables that have Jordan 1s and Dunks, and then there's the tables like yours, which have a nice selection, some of the older Air Max 90s, Air Max 1s, a pair of Nike Air Yeezy 1s. So how do you prepare?
To be honest, I'm a bad preparer, so I always get some shoes, and then I always like, maybe I had to brought this or that, so you don't know where you go to. Even if you go to Germany, you're like, what do I have to bring, Hype or not? It's not Munich, it's Berlin, and you know, and always, when I call German people, they're like, yeah, people don't have money, better you bring cheap stuff. And then on the other hand, I see people buying shoes of 800,000-900,000, so it's really difficult to prepare you. But if I had like a bigger fan, I would bring a lot of stuff. So I had like a lot of diversion. So I didn't need to prepare, so I could sell more. And on the other hand, like the Dunk and the Jordan tables, respect the reseller, man. I'm not a hater, seriously. I have respect for people who are hustling, making money. I did it when I was young, so I never hate on those kinds of type of sellers, you know. I like them, you know.
No, there's
and
people
we need
buy
them.
It as well,
and we
right.
need them.
Yeah.
Otherwise, people don't come. They come to my table and like, hey, what's that crappy shoe? It's almost dead, you know, broken. Yeah, because the kids don't understand the culture and the feeling and what you have to do with that shoe. So, but for the rest, don't respect every hustler.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that the community is so broad now and so mainstream in a way, but also niche, where you have different people coming to these events. You have the people looking for shoes that maybe you bring, but then you have a lot of people who just want, I don't know, to pull a meme out, like a Panda Dunk, for example,
yeah,
right?
True.
Or
true.
One of the pastel Dunk Lows.
True.
And I think it's good for Crepe City, it's good for the sellers, it's good for the buyers if there's a wide selection of items.
I think that's really, really good. You know, I think it's bad and that you see lately on a lot of events, that you have like 50 or 60 sellers with only Pandas and all kind of dunks, and tables with only new Air Max 1. I think that's bad. That needs to be changed. And only like 6-7 other sellers with old school. Try to mix it, or vintage clothing or so. We have to try to mix it. Otherwise, the events are going bad, you know, because you have a lot of people going in and like, I don't want to come back because these shoes are overpriced and they don't have like a variety of different other sneakers or something, you know. So we have to watch that.
For sure. Now, a fun little question at the end. When you're on these events, obviously your prime reason for being here is selling. But do you ever go around and buy? And have you bought anything today? Are you going to maybe look at some stuff?
Maybe I'm going to buy an OG Anniversity MX-1, the blue ones. But I think the price is too high, but it's nothing to buy anymore, man. Those days are over. They are really over. The prices are really high, you know? Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much for joining us. It was a pleasure having you on here.
Thank you, guys.
And enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah, thank you.
So, auf der Crab City haben wir jetzt den einzigartigen Vivian Frank gefunden. Mal schauen, was er zu sagen hat. Vivian, thanks for talking to us. How are you doing?
I'm good, bro. How are you?
I'm good. So, in Berlin for Crab City, were you at the event in London as well?
Yeah, I was at selling at the event in London as well, yeah.
Okay, and you're selling here?
Yeah, we're selling here as well on the Famous Grail. So we sell like collectibles and streetwear bits.
Nice. And how'd you find the event here? How'd you find it in London?
It's not too bad. It's pretty packed for Berlin. I was surprised to see. Like, I thought it might be smallish because obviously it's a UK company coming over here. But it's pretty packed and yeah, it's looking good.
Yeah. You come to Berlin often, right?
Yeah, my girlfriend's German, so we're always here. And I've got a lot of friends here in Germany. So, yeah.
Very nice, very nice. And so you said it's packed. I mean, there were a lot of people waiting in line when we arrived here. How do you find that, you know, resale culture has developed over the years? You've been around for a while now. I've followed you on Instagram for several years. Yeah, how's it developed?
I think it's a bit different. I don't know. Like before, it was always hype releases. Now you see people reselling like general releases like Jordan 1 mids and dunks. But yeah, it's kind of the same. Just buying and selling shoes, right? We just see different shoes nowadays. More general stuff. Like everything's reselling now.
Yeah, exactly. You're not just buying and selling shoes. Famous Grail, you got a lot of stuff. What have you guys brought with you today? What are you selling?
So we're like official retailer for like Pokemon stuff. So we got like Pokemon cards, Yu-Gi-Oh cards, and then we got like a little couple streetwear bits like Bathing Ape and stuff like that. So just nice accessories.
And what's been selling the best here, but also in London on the event?
I think it's the Pokemon. Like it's already sold quite a bit of Pokemon today. So because obviously when you come to these events, we're like the only people to sell our kind of bits. So we have like, it's like our US, like our unique selling point. Like we have these Pokemon cards, so they always do really well for like, kids love them. Yeah.
Nice. And have you seen anything that you wanted to pick up? Have you bought anything yet?
I haven't bought anything yet. I want, the only shoe kind of one is the Jordan 4 Off-White. But my big size in those are myths, so.
But do you not have them already?
Nah, I didn't get them. I was going to buy them. I tried to hold out and now they've gone up a bit. So it's like the one modern, like recent release I haven't got.
How much would you pay for them? Like what's your max that you would pay?
It's hard because my size, like the normal size go for like a grand, two, maybe two. I wouldn't mind paying two, but I think my Bigfoot, because it's a woman's shoe. So like the UK 11, I think it's like UK 11.5. It's like $3,000 or something. If I could find a used pair for a good price, it'd be great. But just finding that my size is the problem.
What about trading some Pokemon cards for them?
I wouldn't mind. If they're up for it, I would.
Yeah. Nice. And what else are you going to be doing in Berlin now? Are you here for the weekend or?
So here till tomorrow, just the usual. Check out the sneaker shops, Shisha, and that's about it. And then we'll be flight home.
Nice. What's your favorite sneaker store in Berlin?
It's definitely Soulbox. Soulbox is great. Like a good, it's just a cool like vibe in there. So yeah, I always go Soulbox and that. And I always go like up, down, Kudam. So yeah.
Nice, man. All right. Thank you very much for talking to us. It was a pleasure having you on the show.
No worries. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Crab City Berlin 2022 im November. Also, wie sagt man so schön? Die Bude ist überlaufen. Da ist jetzt gerade nochmal die Tür aufgegangen. Die ja, TicketbesitzerInnen der zweiten Runde sind reingeströmt. Das war gerade auf jeden Fall ziemlich Feierabend. Also, das ist so, wie wenn du zu deiner Party einlädst. Und dann erzählen das die anderen, den anderen und dann wird's voll. Also von daher, da ist, glaube ich, gut was über die Ladentheke gegangen und wird wahrscheinlich jetzt gleich auch noch über die Tische verteilt werden. Fabs, wie hat's dir gefallen?
Ja, also tolles Event, aber vor allem tolle Leute, ne? Das hört man ja auch in den Interviews. Wir haben mit richtig coolen und auch sehr verschiedenen Leuten gesprochen, die alle ganz verschiedene Meinungen hatten, Experiences auch. Und das ist halt das Tolle, die Community.
Ich glaube, wenn man auf so ein Event geht, natürlich ist klar, du kaufst und verkaufst, aber viel schöner ist darüber hinaus ja noch, wenn man halt eben mit guten Leuten ins Gespräch kommen kann, alte Freunde wieder trifft, neue Freundschaften macht und schließt und generell halt einfach dieser Situation oder dieser Szenerie frönt, ne? Also wenn man einfach Spaß am Thema Turnschuh hat und wenn man dann am Ende des Tages noch ein bisschen was mitnimmt, umso besser. Ich habe das Portemonnaie in der Hosentasche gelassen. Für mich war jetzt gerade nichts dabei, beziehungsweise glücklicherweise einiges in meinen Größen nicht oder in meiner Größe nicht, weil also Geld ausgeben hätte ich schon gekonnt.
Ja, ich auch, aber...
Kein Road Warrior.
Kein Road Warrior und ich muss sagen, ich bin auch... sehr happy mit dem, was ich zu Hause habe. Auch ein paar Paare, die ich noch nicht getragen habe, wie zum Beispiel diese sehr, sehr schönen Monarch Air Max One Putters. Deswegen bin ich und, glaube ich, meine Frau auch froh darüber, dass ich heute nichts gekauft habe.
Obwohl die Baby-Sneaker-Auswahl, die war schon sehr sweet, ne? Da hättest du im Kleinen direkt noch mal ein bisschen was mitbringen können. Das wäre eigentlich auch eine ganz nice Nummer gewesen.
Ja, das stimmt, aber ich will ihn ja nicht verwöhnen.
Oder verwöhnt vielleicht schon, aber vielleicht nicht. Vielleicht nicht zu sehr spoilen. Naja, in dem Sinne, Crab City, Berlin. Und damit vielen lieben Dank, dass ihr bei der 119. Episode mit dabei wart. Ihr könnt alle Episoden wie gewohnt kostenlos auf Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Deezer, Amazon Music, Audible, Google, Podcast, Portal, Podgy und bei allen anderen Streamingdiensten hören. Und wir würden uns sehr freuen, wenn ihr dem O-Schuhen-Podcast und unserem News-Podcast O-News dort folgt. Ja, wo ihr den Podcast am liebsten hört und natürlich auch die Release-Info aktiviert, dann kriegt ihr immer mit, wenn eine neue Episode erscheint. Hört auf jeden Fall auch die aktuelle Folge O-News und beantwortet die Frage der Woche, powered by StockX. Alle Einsendungen haben am Ende des Monats die Chance auf einen Sneaker-Gutschein im Wert von fetten 250 Euro. Wenn ihr diese Folge O-Schuhen übrigens in eurer Instagram-Story teilt und uns verlinkt, damit wir das auch sehen, dann habt ihr auch die Möglichkeit, mit im Lostopf zu sein. Schaut auch auf Facebook, TikTok und Instagram.com/O-Schuhen-Podcast vorbei und interagiert mit uns und der Community. Checkt auf jeden Fall auch die Sneaker-Suchmaschine Sneakerjägers und werdet Teil der Sneakerjägers-Community. Supporten könnt ihr uns unter anderem mit einer positiven 5-Sterne-Bewertung bei Spotify und Apple Podcasts. Über 600 positive Bewertungen hat O-Schuhen auf den Plattformen schon und eine Podcast-Review wollen wir gerne mit euch teilen. Tommy Turnon schrieb, O-Schuhen, das Erbe von Turnschuh TV, damals wie heute die Quelle für Stories mit einem gewissen Twist rund um sportliches Schuhwerk. Klare Empfehlung. Vielen Dank. Tut uns einen Gefallen und supportet die Podcasts und erzählt mindestens einem Freund oder einer Freundin, die sich für Sneaker und Streetwear interessiert, von uns. Show some love. Dankeschön. Wir hören uns in der nächsten Episode wieder. Bis dahin, macht's gut.
Yo, bis zum nächsten Mal.